it's Jim Sefter, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. My special guest today is an independent radiation expert. She's worked in 46 countries as a professional geoscientist. She's been an expert witness on depleted uranium weaponry at the International Criminal Tribunal for Afghanistan in Tokyo in 2003. She was recently appointed an expert witness on DU weaponry for the Canadian Parliament. Her name is Lauren Moray, and it's a pleasure to welcome you back to the Dynamic Duo, Lauren.
Good afternoon, Jim. How are you today?
Just terrific, and I'm looking forward to having a conversation with you about your take on the big picture of where things stand in the world today, geopolitically.
Right. It's a mess.
Boy, I can agree with that 100%. And it's these domestic politics, you know, I don't know about how all these caucuses and votes are going to get things much straightened out, particularly when there's some indications it's being messed with by the use of these electronic voting machines. That's been bothering me for a long time.
Well, we're just going to get refried beans. We're going to get Bush, Clinton, Bush, Clinton is my guess. And I just think the elections are just a big TV game show. It's just playing with us.
I wish I could say you're wrong, but I think there's an awful lot of reason to believe you're right. Europeans think it's absurd that we should have private companies count our votes. I mean, what could be more important to the welfare and health of the country? And yet these are companies that are even closely aligned politically with the GOP, and everybody knows it.
Well, the European countries have voting machines, too, and now they're going to Japan. It's just a global takeover, and what people may not know is that Jacob Rothschild in the city of London have major ownership in the largest voting machine company in the world.
Really?
Yeah, and so what I've been doing is investigating through the nuclear weapons program who is really behind the scenes pulling the big strings around the world. And all roads lead to London. Wall Street serves the city of London, and it's about a square mile within the ancient Roman walls of the original London. And it's the home of the international bankers and even the Queen of England, the sovereign crowned leader of Britain, is not allowed to enter that zone without being invited and accompanied by the mayor of London.
So even the reigning monarch has to have special permission to enter the city of London.
And the reigning monarch is not allowed to enter with anything other than liveried servants. In other words, no arms, no military, no guns, nothing that could overturn the tremendous wealth and power that the City of London has. And in addition, to make sure they didn't lose their grip, they intermarried with the royal family, the landed gentry. It's even Princess Diana. Her mother is a Rothschild.
So you take it that it's these half a dozen wealthiest families that are really pulling the strings worldwide, roughly speaking, to the extent to which it's possible to do so?
Yes, and it's not just half a dozen families. It's bloodlines that go back all the way to Mesopotamia, where they were money lenders then. And many of them today are Jewish, but they weren't Jewish then. It's bloodlines, and they can be practicing Christians or practicing Muslims or practicing anything. That's irrelevant. It's the DNA, it's the bloodlines that tie them together, which is the most important thing to focus on.
Well, as far as Mesopotamia goes, we're doing quite a job of messing up their DNA and bloodlines today with the depleted uranium weaponry.
It's a symbolic massacre and extermination of the mother of civilization. And Mesopotamia is where music, science, art, astronomy, language, mathematics, law, all those things that we practice every day in our lives, they all originated in Mesopotamia. Those are brilliant, brilliant people.
Many Americans seem to forget in their enthusiasm, or at least in the past, for this war in Iraq, that the Tigris-Euphrates Valley is the home of the mythical Garden of Eden.
That's right. And I actually did my master's degree. I'm a geoscientist, but I fell in love with the Middle East. And I did my master's degree at UC Berkeley and graduated in, let's see, 1978. And my expertise or my field of research was the domestication of plants and animals between the Tigris and Euphrates after the last ice age. And it was so fascinating and very, very interesting. And so what is happening is this city of London, these international bankers, in order to create a one-class society globally, which basically is communism, and to it's a slave class, and then to dominate over it with one central government is what their goal is. They failed in Russia, and Putin, of course, very recently has said this will never work. It's going to fail, and of course it will. But in order to create one global society and class, they have to annihilate cultural identity. And so that's why they are destroying cultural relics in these countries that they've gone in and annihilated. And this is Iraq, Afghanistan, Yugoslavia, Lebanon. They bombed all of the cultural relics into radioactive rubble.
Lauren, this is just terrifying. I mean, this is so not just inhumane, but anti-civilization. I mean, this is just you're describing a horror scene.
Well, that's what it is, and they will expand it. The U.S. is bankrupt. In the 1700s and 1800s, the British Empire actually went bankrupt from waging all these wars all over the globe in order to establish the British Empire. And so what they're doing in order to avoid that, they're using the United States military as a City of London or a British Empire proxy. And they've turned our soldiers and our National Guardsmen into radioactive DNA, which is DNA goo and mush, because it's passed on to all future generations. And we no longer have the ability even to defend our states. The governors don't really have a viable National Guard because we have over 55% medical disability rate in the soldiers who've been sent to the radioactive battlefields.
Isn't it the case that the soldiers who are returning with exposure to DU are going to be incapable of speaking of the men, fathering, a genetically normal offspring?
Well, they should have, and this in all my talks to audiences, I tell them to have their sons and grandsons deposit sperm in sperm banks before they go. And even the Israeli soldiers were warned to do that before the 2006 attack on Lebanon.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Lauren Morey. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is published on exotic weapons, including HAARP, weather modification, tectonic warfare, mind control, fourth-generation nuclear weapons, and scientific issues related to 9/11. Her name is Lauren Morey. And Lauren, you know, I'm so troubled by this prospect that all of these, many of them seriously injured Marine soldiers and sailors who are returning to the United States are going to be incapable of having genetically normal children, and the consequences of this are going to be enormous.
They're going to be enormous. It's a cascading economic and social and public health problem. But, of course, the doctors and medical practitioners have been very silent about it. because even a year before these wars started, the Gulf War since 1991, doctors in communities where the soldiers have been economically drafted have been taken aside by the military, trained in how to treat the soldiers who are returned to their communities sicker than dogs, and, well, basically their uranium meat. And the military threatened the doctors and said, you can only diagnose post-traumatic stress syndrome, which, of course, is all in your head, and we will fine you $10,000 to $250,000 and put you in prison for from 1 to 10 years under the HIPAA law, H-I-P-P-A, which was passed in about 1996 or 7 by Clinton. And it was to prevent physicians from revealing personal information about their patients to pharmaceutical companies. But the military is using it to extort silence and compliance from the medical field who are treating these soldiers. So even journalists, and no one's even allowed anywhere near the planes that are flying in every night. And these soldiers are being transported to Walter Reed, where they are treated. Journalists can't get in there. And then they are sent back to their communities where they're a tremendous burden on the state and local health facilities because the VA is doing absolutely nothing. We have over 600,000 soldiers on medical disability since 1991, and the Pentagon has tested 270 for depleted uranium.
This is wrenching. Unbelievable. And I've heard stories of men returning and their genitals are pained and their semen is black, and when they have sex with their wives or girlfriends, they have a scorching, burning effect on their vaginas.
Yes, Susan Riordan actually is a Canadian widow of a Gulf War veteran from the first Gulf War. She said her husband came back and he had this absolutely horrible burning semen. And when Vanity Fair interviewed her, they actually published the interview in a very large article. And she told them that she filled 20 condoms with frozen peas at a time. She put them in the freezer, tied them off, and put them in the freezer. And when she was through having intercourse with her husband, she would cram one into her vagina to stop the burning pain. It was so excruciating. And she said, and when it got on his skin, it did the same thing to him.
Warren, what in God's name is going on here? I mean, this means these people are coming back. They're radioactive. They're toxic. They're lethal weapons.
Well, actually, we've got Gulf War syndrome, too. I just got, because this depleted uranium, these dirty bombs, dirty missiles, and dirty bullets are actually radioactive poison gas weapons. It's a radioactive nanoparticle global doomsday machine, and it's going around the world in 2 to 3 weeks. It's traveling from Iraq and Afghanistan and Yugoslavia to the British atmosphere, where we have measurements at a nuclear weapons facility. And it only takes 7 to 9 days. Dr. Chris Busby was able to get a continuous air monitoring record from 1998 through 2003. And there was a huge spike in uranium in the atmosphere in Britain during the 2001 Afghan attack, and an even higher one during the 2003 Iraq attack. And he calculated during the 2003 Iraq attack that any man living within 100 miles of an air monitor in England in 2 weeks inhaled 23 million radioactive depleted uranium particles.
Good God.
And one of the very, very, very quick responses is people in, we have a global epidemic of diabetes now. and they're getting diabetes within 2 months of being exposed to depleted uranium. Now, I got air monitoring data from the Los Angeles Power and Light Company, and the uranium levels in groundwater on the east side of L.A., where the water drains down from the mountains, doubled. The uranium levels doubled between 2006 and 2007. And I sent you a graph of airstrikes in Iraq and Afghanistan, 2004 through 2007.
Yeah.
And that's precisely when they did 835 airstrikes in Afghanistan in 1 month, and it was last July. That's 28 a day.
You know, I mean, from an evolutionary point of view, we're talking about a catastrophe to the human species here. We're talking about a huge segment of the species being either killed outright or contaminated and turned into, you know, non-reproductive entities. Yeah.
That's right.
And it's going to spread in an epidemiological pattern, too, Lorraine,
right.
You know, because these guys are still going to have sex.
And the reason they're doing it is to depopulate the Earth by 2 to 4 billion people. Henry Kissinger is quoted in a national security memo in 1974 stating that was a higher priority than nuclear annihilation.
Unbelievable.
To depopulate.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Lauren Moray. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Dynamic Duo. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. My special guest today received the University of California President's Mentoring Fellowship in the Sciences during her PhD research on atmospheric dust and the history of the Earth's magnetic field. Her name, Lauren Moray. Lauren, I must tell you that sometimes I have the impression that Henry Kissinger may go down as one of the most malevolent intellects in history.
Well, I think the Rockefellers should be above his name.
That he has company.
Well, he's a Rockefeller contractor. And he and Brzezinski were recruited from academia to serve the Rockefellers, but we have to remember that Henry Kissinger was a German in World War II, and he was very young, but when the war ended, he facilitated the transfer of all the Nazi technologies to the United States. So he just had a great roller skate into power levels in the U.S., and they picked him up really fast. And it's because he's so duplicitous.
Well, tell me, how much of this world depopulation program would have taken place, do you think, in the absence of the Bush-Cheney administration?
Well, it was kicked off in 1991 by Bush Sr., and the Carlyle Group made their first big money on depleted uranium weaponry, and Frank Carlucci, who was the CEO of the Carlyle Group, was also on the board of directors for the biggest depleted uranium manufacturers. So it's the Iron Triangle. It's politics and military and the weapons manufacturers all working together. It's what President Eisenhower warned against, the military-industrial complex.
Don't these people realize that their children or grandchildren are going to be affected by this, that some of them may die as a consequence of the policies they're pursuing now?
Well, I'd like to compare two presidents who were both affected, their children, by bomb testing fallout. President Kennedy, as everyone knows, he and Jacqueline Kennedy, they lost a little baby, Patrick, who was born right after they moved into the White House. And Jackie Kennedy had a lot of miscarriages and problems carrying children full term. And it was the bomb testing fallout that was killing many other unborn babies. It's called infant mortality and also a decline in birth rates due to loss of fetuses. And And he read a paper by Dr. Ernest Sternglass about the link between fallout and children's cancer and infant mortality and low birth weight babies. And he contacted Dr. Sternglass and asked him to testify in Congress in 1963 in support of the Partial Test Ban Treaty. And Dr. Sternglass helped convince the Senate to sign the Partial Test Ban Treaty. Now, that was one president's response. George Bush Sr. and Barbara Bush, his wife, had six children, all of them, including the present president, had learning disabilities because of fetal exposure to nuclear pollution from fallout, bomb testing fallout. And that's why this president has such a difficulty speaking and presenting coherent, you know, language. He's teleprompted and completely handled for everything.
I'm not even convinced he's capable of reading, to tell you the truth.
I don't think he can. He was reading that goat book
upside down
on 9/11. And he's not a stupid man, but he's an awfully dysfunctional one. But George Bush had a toddler sister when he was a child named Robin. And when she was a toddler, she got leukemia. Of course, it was from the bomb testing fallout. And George and Barbara Bush took her to Walter Reed without telling the other children she was even sick or where they took her or anything about her. And as soon as she died in the hospital room, they walked out the door, they went off and played golf the rest of the day, and they never buried their own daughter.
Good
Barbara
God.
Barbara Bush's mother buried Robin 2 years later. So
good God.
So this is how different people respond to life-threatening experiences, even with their own children. These are two very different responses in two major leaders in our country. And it's illogical. We have a different pattern of behaviors that are expected in our everyday lives and in our responses to tragedy. But these are the ruling elite. They have a totally different value system. And I don't think they even like their own children. I think they like their horses and dogs more than they like their own children in most cases. So,
well, they may not leave much of a genetic legacy then.
They don't even care. They just, you know the rule, the big rule with people like that, the ruling elite, is the guy with the biggest pile of toys when he dies wins. That's exactly how they think.
They're so childish.
It is childish. It's insanity. And actually, it's based on greed and a fear of being able to compete and to survive with other people. They really, I think, have terrible self-esteem. They have a terrible insecurity about and fears that they might starve to death or whatever. I mean, how many trillion, Jim, does a family need to get by?
It's ridiculous.
It's beyond ridiculous.
So they have fear of a level playing field, so if they don't cheat to guarantee they're going to win, they won't get involved in a game.
That's right. And so what they're doing is they're destroying the entire planet, the environment, humanity, all living things, just to make sure that they're going to survive. That's the basis for it.
That they are going to survive.
They're going to survive.
And don't they realize how transitory they are? I mean, that they represent one, you know, brief generation in the history of the human lineage, and that without the possibility of successful reproduction, and we're not going to long survive?
Well, if they don't even like their own children, they don't really care whether they survive or not. They just want the biggest pile of toys when they die. I know these people. That's exactly how they think. And plus, they're drunk and on drugs most of the time and screwing other people.
And they literally and figuratively.
In every way.
And they have no concern about the future of the human species?
They hate themselves, so how could they love anyone else? They despise themselves. George Bush Sr. is a pedophile. George Bush Jr. is, I don't even think he knows what he is. He's bisexual. And Laura Bush is pretty fed up with him. She just raked him right down the face with her fingernails between Christmas and New Year's because he was so drunk the whole time. She's had to put up with she's a codependent. She's had to put up with his garbage in the White House. She's fed up. He and Condoleezza Rice are flouncing all over the world together, and he said, well, Laura isn't here, so Condi can be my date. What kind of a public statement is that to make in the global media?
And we all know her famous slip where she referred to him as her husband.
Yeah, right.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Lauren Moray. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Lauren Moray, is an independent radiation specialist who has worked in 46 countries as a professional geoscientist, an expert witness on DU weaponry at the International Criminal Tribunal for Afghanistan in Tokyo in 2003. She was recently appointed an expert witness on DU weaponry for the Canadian Parliament. Lauren, before we continue, I must mention that a news report I've just received indicates that there will be a recount in New Hampshire of the Republican as well as the Democratic primary there. The Republican had been held up because PayPal wouldn't advance the sum of money necessary to pay for its conduct, but the Secretary of State extended the deadline until 3 o'clock today, and money was in fact provided, and now it's going to take place, which I think has the potential to blow apart the manipulation of by means of electronic voting machines and optical scanners. I mean, this is a small enough state that everyone is going to be able to understand what happened there.
Yeah. The thing about New Hampshire is that it's a small state, and so there's a lot more social connectivity, and people are much more able to hold this accountable because they know more about each other and who did what and who voted for who. It's much harder in a big state like California or New York.
It's also a strong anti-tax state and a strong constitutional state, and it's a place where I expected Ron Paul would do very well, so that his 8% showing suggested to me that that was, that was in Michigan, but he got about 10% there, perhaps. I thought he'd do much, much better.
Well, he did do much, much better. I saw a video clip on YouTube, about 10 minutes, and this guy put up what was coming in from the precincts, which AP posted, the Associated Press. And McCain had 0-0, 1-1 in the different precincts. He had a terrible showing. And Ron Paul was in the 800s and 700s and 600s in each precinct.
Yeah.
So, and then at the very bottom, they had the totals, and it was the opposite of what they actually got in the columns of listed votes.
Isn't that something, Lauren? They're so blatant about all this.
They're so blatant about it. AP put it on TV, and then they had totally reversed totals at the bottom of each column.
Fascinating. Fascinating.
So I think if they can keep it together in New Hampshire, I mean, you know, people just smell. They smell every election now. They know it's rigged. They know the voting machines are rigged. In Berkeley, for instance, in the first election where George Bush was selected, and in the second election where he was reselected, he didn't win. People voting in Berkeley precincts, voting stations, told me, two of them in each election told me they had voted for a completely different person, and a name they didn't even select popped up on the screen. And when they went to the polling booth, the officials, they said, oh, well, it's too late.
It's too late.
It's too late.
You mean
we can't do anything about it?
You mean once you voted, it's too late to correct it, even though it's a mistake?
That's right.
A mistake you couldn't even know it occurred until you had voted?
And our Berkeley mayor, who was a new mayor, elected over a very popular woman mayor we'd had for 12 years, his name is Tom Bates. He came out of the California legislature. He's turned into just an absolute shill for the University of California and the City of London. And he was another electronic voting machine disaster.
Yeah. Well, these things, anyone who knows the least about computers knows that this is the most elementary, this is the simplest kind of fraud to perpetrate. I mean, what they obviously were doing in New Hampshire was just giving the, you know, figure out which candidate is going to get the higher total and just substitute who they are recorded for.
That's right.
Just like you were showing.
It was pretty simple, and it's the voting machines. They're just crap. It's just a game show.
And so many Americans are so naive, and they think, I had a couple reports of voters who complained that when they, you know, cast their ballot that they were coming out wrong, and they immediately reported it, and the woman to whom they reported said, well, you know, the computers can count better than people can.
Yeah, well, guess who wrote the security software for a number of the biggest voting machine companies? It was SAIC, Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, and what was it, convicted of five felonies, Admiral Poindexter. They wrote the security software for the voting machines at SAIC, Science Applications International Corporation, which is the biggest spook shop for the military and intelligence in the United States.
Would you suspect they had a role in 9/11?
Of course. The Navy did. The Navy engineered it. The cruise missile that hit the Pentagon went right through Naval Intelligence first. And then it went through the accounting office where the computers and the accountants were who could have investigated the missing $3.5 or $4 trillion.
2.3, yeah.
Yeah, that the Pentagon said they lost. And after 9/11, they said, oh, well, all the data was on those computers, and the accountants are dead now, so there's no way to trace it.
And, of course, the records were there, and much of them had to have been destroyed.
And Jim, you've been in the military. You and I know, and everybody knows, the Pentagon is probably the most protected building in the world.
Yes. That's absolutely right.
And how could a cruise missile hit it if the military didn't do it to themselves?
I know.
And it's the Navy. It's the Navy running the whole show. One of the buildings for the Navy SEALs in San Diego on the Navy base, if you look at it from space or from satellites, it's in the shape of a swastika.
I'm inclined to think that was, just a coincidence of architecture, but it could have been deliberate, of course.
Well, could you please tell me why the building for biomedicine at Stanford University is textured on the outside with swastikas?
Really?
Yes.
That's pretty weird.
Yes.
That's pretty weird.
Well, what is the Human Genome Project for? It's eugenics. It's to develop ethnic-specific bioweapons and other bioweapons. And now Google, the wife of one of the Google owners, has a startup company to collect people's DNA information through the Internet. She said, oh, I want to help people. And Jacob Rothschild started Google, and the headquarters are being moved to Israel very soon.
That's kind of creepy, isn't it?
It's very creepy. But it's not going to work. And the most important thing is to inform people, because information is power. The world turns on information. And people have never been as aware as they are now because of the Internet and because of programs like yours.
Stand by with my special guest, Lord Murray. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo.